Hey everybody, I'm Dr. Deb, and welcome to another episode of PTSD and Beyond. Stories. Storytelling. Throughout the ages of time, stories have captured our attention. We have found ourselves and find ourselves listening, relating, and connecting to the story as well as to the person of the story. Having thoughts of, I'm not alone. You are not alone. We are in this thing called life together. Hey everybody, this is Dr. Deb Lind and welcome to the PTSD and Beyond podcast. Every week we bring amazing guests, whether they're subject matter experts, inspiring souls, forward thinkers, or perhaps even wounded healers. In June is PTSD Awareness Month. And here at PTSD and Beyond, we've been working on something pretty special for you. Something that you can listen to each and every day. Each day in the month of June, we'll be sharing the unique story of someone with lived experience with trauma and PTSD. We'll learn a little bit about their journey, how they're progressing through a healing journey, as well as hear their post-traumatic growth and how they've found meaning, purpose, and a superpower in the process of healing. We got to let you guys know that we are extremely grateful for all the folks that have shown tremendous courage to come on the podcast and share their stories and inspire everyone to listen to this podcast around the globe. We've had folks from England, Canada, New Zealand, India, Malaysia, Australia, the United States, and beyond. We felt that there was no better way to honor PTSD Awareness Month and to share the stories of our brothers and sisters from around the world and acknowledging their trauma, their challenges with PTSD, but also to teach us and to inspire us, allowing us a glimpse of their healing journey. We here at PTSD and Beyond hope that these stories will touch your heart and touch your soul and offer you inspiration and compassion for others suffering from PTSD, from folks that are affected by PTSD, as well as yourself. These are the powerful lived experience stories of real people. They are the champions who keep striving, who keep healing, who keep growing, and who keep living. We hope that you enjoy the PTSD and Beyond 30 Stories in 30 Days, honoring PTSD Awareness Month. Remember to please share these episodes with folks that you feel and you know will benefit. Remember to subscribe, like, and share. So let's give a listen to today's guests. 30 Stories in 30 Days starts now. Hey everybody, it's Dr. Deb here with PTSD and Beyond. And yes, 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 we have another Share My Story segment. Today's guest comes all the way from Australia, which we're so blessed because guess what? We've got people that listen to the podcast from all over the world. We stopped counting at 54 countries and we finally got our first person in Japan, also in Greece, which is amazing because today, the day that we're recording is Greek Orthodox Easter. So I want to give a shout out to my heritage out there for that. But this podcast today is focused on an individual who is an artist, a musician, a songwriter. They have their own podcast and as well as a website to highlight their artistry. And again, I mentioned that she comes all the way from Australia. Guys, let's give a heartfelt PTSD and Beyond welcome to Ray. Ray, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. Dr. Deb, I really appreciate what you're doing and you're providing a space for this, which is something that we need to talk about more. I'm a big believer in because, yeah, I couldn't talk about it for such a long time and so many of us can't. It's so beautiful to be able to have a space where, you know, we can start to share and connect.
One of the things about sharing and connecting is we've talked before about the history of sharing stories and that folklore and the tales of keeping a person's legacy. So I think one of the cool things about sharing stories is this moment right now for you is a mini autobiography.
Oh, okay. Yep. That's so true.
Isn't it? Right. So, and the cool thing about it is, in addition to sharing your story and having it be an autobiography, is that this episode will stay. So when we think about cinema and music and artistry, it's always preserved. And I think that's the beauty, at least one of the beauties about doing podcasting is it's the modern day, I don't want to say modern day cinema, but it is the modern day way of preserving artistry in a different medium. True. And so with that, share with us a little bit about your story.
All right. Well, I am the fourth child of five plus an extra foster child. So I grew up in a big home in the country. My parents were pastors. And so I'm a PK, pastor's kid. And that came with its own set of difficulties. And then my dad was also a Vietnam veteran. And he was a tunnel rat in the Vietnam War. So he'd go down the little tunnels and he'd be digging and looking for bombs, which was absolutely insane. The bravery of those men that did that was crazy. And in Australia, it was all conscripted. So he was actually called up. He was just a farm boy. He wasn't a soldier. And he was called up by his country to go to war. And that had his own impacts as well. And he's had PTSD my entire life that I've known him. That's what he had. And I really struggled to really have a relationship with my dad because of that. And then my mother also, after having her fifth child, so I was the unexpected fourth child, and then she had her tubes tied and then fell pregnant again at 42. And she had severe postnatal depression after having my little sister. And so I kind of grew up in a home with a lot of kids, a very religious Pentecostal background and upbringing, along with two very emotionally unavailable parents. And to no fault of their own, they just didn't know how to deal with it. And, you know, psychology was not even in my vocabulary growing up. To me and the church, it was like psychology is from the devil. It means that you don't have enough faith, and like all these really warped beliefs around mental health and emotional intelligence. And I was just so emotionally stunted. It was ridiculous. And I had an uncle who grew up as a foster brother for my mum in my grandmother's family, who had nine children. And he was also a Vietnam veteran, and he'd been out of prison. And my family, being pastors, kind of had like all the community with their children. And their mentality was God will take care of us. It was kind of a bit of a cop out, but it was just how they coped in their circumstance. And so we had all sorts of people living in our house all the time. And so for me, it wasn't a safe home. And I ended up having an adult sexual relationship with this older man who was supposed to be my uncle and a mentor in the church between the ages of 4 and 12 years old. And that was something that I carried with me as my sin. I thought it was my fault. I was groomed. And it wasn't until I became a mother at the age of 24 to the most amazing man in my life, my soulmate, who supported me through everything. But when I had a child in my arms and I looked at this baby and realized that in 4 years' time he would be the same age that I was when I got myself into this situation, it was like a flick switched, and I realized that it wasn't my fault that I was a child. There was no way in the world that I could have known what was going on, what was right or wrong. And so I became from like this shame to being a victim, I guess, of that child abuse. And then that mother wolf was also born, and I was like, whoa, he's still out there. And I had a rumor that he had a working with children's card, which is something we have in Australia for children to be protected, like a blue card. And so I couldn't live with myself and not say something, thinking that other children out there could potentially be going through what I went through. And that was a really, really scary thing. And so I reported it to the police because I just thought if I do that, then it's their responsibility. The blood's off my hands. You know, the authorities can take control. And that turned into a 3-year-long trial. I had to share my story over 3 days, be cross-examined in front of a jury and a judge. And it was super intense. Like, wow. It was super, super intense. And less than 2% of these stories, you know, these things that happened as a child coming out when you're an adult, less than 2% of those in Australia actually get to trial because of the drama and the proof that has to go into it. And so I consider myself very, I guess, blessed to have been able to go through that process. And we actually got a guilty verdict, which is even rarer.
Oh, wow.
So we had 9 different charges come back as guilty of indecent sexual assault towards a minor. And I've since then been on a jury myself and understand how challenging that is to get 12 people to agree on those types of really quite serious charges. So what that meant for me, and one of the reasons I did that, was so that he would be listed on the serious sex offenders list for the rest of his life. Mm-hmm. He wouldn't be able to work with children. Everyone would have the opportunity to know that he needed help, and he did go to jail for a little bit, but also mainly just protecting children from this person who obviously needed help. So that's kind of my story in a short, really condensed format. But I've heard so many women who I share my story to, and they haven't been believed. You know, they haven't been able to talk about it, which I couldn't do for so long. They didn't, you know, haven't been able to report it to the police, or it hasn't had enough evidence to be able to go to court. You know, it's all he said, she said sort of thing. And it's not been that sort of process. I make it sound simple. I mean, it was so hard. So, so, so hard. Like, I literally thought that I was diving into a well of blackness, and I did not believe that I would come out. And honestly, I had angels of people around me who held me up during that time that I was just an absolute shell of a human being. But I was doing it. I actually probably would say I felt like a martyr for my children. I was like, I need to do this because I don't want my children to live in a world where this is something that people do, that they don't say something, because I couldn't live like that anymore. And I'd seen, you know, my dad with PTSD and it not be dealt with, and the Vietnam veterans, when they came back in Australia, they were shunned and they weren't supported to deal with what they had been through. They'd been to war, and it wasn't just an old-fashioned war. It was an intense, harsh war with kids and families. It was horrible. And then when they came back to our country, they were left to not deal with it. And so I'd seen the result of not dealing with traumatic events, and it's not healthy. And I actually come from a pool of, in Australia, Vietnam veteran children were the highest suicide risk in Australia for quite a long time, because their dads were not there for them, you know. And it's really hard. So, yeah, it's been a journey. But I have done 6-7 years now of psychology. I had severe postnatal depression with all 3 of my children as I dealt with my experience, but also as I tried to better myself. And I did a lot of courses, a lot of psychiatry. I tried embodiment work. I've done spiritual work, and I've done a lot of clinical psychology work as well. And I'm a scientist. I studied biomedical science at university, and I finished that degree. I'm not really that academic. I'm just really driven. And when I was a kid, I had anxiety attacks, and I got tested, and I had these horrible chest pains. I'd stay home, and I had scans and all the tests. And I actually remember sitting in a doctor's office one day when I was a kid, and the doctor told my mum, she's just lying to get out of school because there's nothing wrong with her. That's what they told my mum.
Oh my gosh.
And yeah, when I heard that, I'm like, but I know that I'm feeling physical pain, and I didn't know what it was. I didn't associate the two things. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't until I finished a biomedical science degree and I studied that hard, like, and it took me a lot of study to actually get there. I'm not naturally academic, to realize what it was. And if I had have known, I should have done a psychology degree, really. But if I had have known, you know, it would have been a completely different journey. And so I suffer with complex PTSD, which, for those of you who don't know, is when it's you've been through trauma and then it's not dealt with for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's other symptoms that come on top of that. So it's been rough, but it gets better. And I've always had that hope and belief, and maybe it comes from the faith that I had growing up, or just the self-assurance or strength. I don't know where it comes from, if I'm honest, but I've always known that it will get better. And there's definitely been those moments where I was really weak, but in those moments when I needed to be carried, there was always someone there to sort of hold me back. And I've been saved so many times by people in my life. It's untrue.
It's really beautiful. Thank you for sharing your story. First of all, I mean, the way that you've articulated all of the things that had, as a summary, that had happened, as well as the way that the pinnacle point of being a mom, and it's interesting. There's a book that's written by Robert Quinn. It's actually a business book called Deep Change. And Quinn talks about how there's a catastrophic event or turning point event that will occur where people make deep changes. And for a lot of women, it has been when they've had children. And they've
having children is traumatic.
Having children is traumatic. Yes, yes, yes. And I'm a mom too. And I had similar thoughts about, no, I don't want this happening, you know, to my kids. And it wasn't even an option. Meaning it wasn't an option to not do the work. That was not an option to not do the work. And I hear that same conviction with yourself, with the awareness of the 4 years, as well as to, you know, to be the mother wolf, to take the next steps with, you know, confronting a person who did, you know, the abuse, and to make sure that it never happens again. So caring for your own children, caring for your inner child, as well as caring for the other kids that are out there, and also hearing about ways that trauma has affected your life, from, you know, anxiety attacks to, you know, you said here, in moments of when I needed to be carried, there's always been somebody there. So being okay with being vulnerable, with, you know, letting that,
which is so hard, right?
Yes, it is, isn't it? And to have people around us who can see that vulnerability and who are there without question to be there to lift you up.
I'm sure they have plenty of questions. And for most of my life, I couldn't get the words past my throat. You know, they were trapped in my body. This story was trapped in my body. And I'm sure there were a lot of people with lots of questions about why was I the way that I was, and why am I acting this way? Why am I getting so upset about dropping my ice cream on the ground? It's just ice cream. You know, I would explode in those moments. But yeah, it comes out at the right time.
It does come out at the right
time. You just have to trust it. Big believer in that.
And to trust it too. I'm a big believer on that. That's a great self quote. It'll come, it always comes out at the right time, and to trust it. So when we think about, we go through this journey, right? We start the journey and we think about, at least now anyway, we can reflect back on ways that we've grown, you know, ways that we've changed, ways that we've grown. Sometimes people right now, there might be a listener right now who's thinking, I just started my journey. I can't even think about growth. I hope that growth happens for me. And it can, and it does. So what are some ways that you've grown from this?
Oh gosh. I can definitely tell you that I've been in those moments where it's very difficult to see any light in what can feel very, very dark. And I always when I had psychology, I sometimes had psychologists ask me, what do I feel in my body? What color is it? What does it feel like? And I always had this black tar, like filled me from my throat down to my groin. You know, it was just black, sticky, thick tar that I could never run away from. And when that became overwhelming and I couldn't release the pressure on that, that was when I'd have suicide, like fantasies of suicide. And it was never something I was going to act on. Mm-hmm. It was just something that gave me a release mentally of like thinking about maybe there's an end. And I never believed I'd make it past 30, if I'm honest, because I just didn't think that I could survive that sort of misery. Like I was just holding on for so long. I'm just one more day. And I couldn't think past that because it was so hard to believe that I'd have to continue living through that suffering. Mm-hmm. And I also was gifted when I was about 6 years old. I saw my sister learning to play piano, and I told my mom I wanted to play piano because I saw one of my dad who had PTSD. He'd learned piano as a kid, and when he sat to the he wouldn't tell you that he can play piano. He didn't think he was very good, but he was amazing. And he would sit down at the piano, and I could see the release happening in him spiritually. His whole body changed. When he played music, he would worship at the piano, and everything about him changed. And I'm like, I need that release. You know, I saw that. I'm like, I need to be able to do that, what he's doing. And so I learned piano from very young. I played and sang in the church, but I would write diaries and I would write poetry and I'd write songs in my bedroom, but that was a very private thing. And if I listened to the radio, which wasn't Christian radio, that had to be done in private because we were not allowed to listen to non-Christian music in our family. And so As I started doing the work as a mum and doing psychology, I realized and they sort of pointed out to me that music and songwriting had been a pressure valve that I'd used to release some of that black tar out of me. And the more work that I did, I've been committed. I've spent weeks in hospital working on some of this really hard stuff. And sometimes you need that really safe space. Mm-hmm. To delve into some of those deeper things. Like I needed to forgive my parents for not doing the work and for maybe having a bit of neglect, and I had to so much forgiveness. And I did all these courses, and they were all great about becoming a mum, but also dealing with the grief of losing a childhood. Like I didn't get to be a kid.
Yeah.
You know, you grow up very quickly when you go through trauma as a child. And the more and more I did work and more I allowed space for myself to delve into that blackness, it was like just taking out a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. And then I don't know if you know much about like how coal and diamonds work, but like diamonds create like under this huge amount of pressure of coal, and that's where diamonds come from. And if I'm honest, about 2 years ago, I came back from a retreat. I go to these like songwriter retreats. Again, I would be like this timid, completely different person to what you hear and see now. I was timid. I was shy. I was nervous. I was insecure. And I was afraid. I was so, so afraid. And I went to this retreat in Nashville on a whim, because someone kind of put out a group message like, hey, let's go to the songwriter retreat. I'm like, I made a joke of it. And my husband's like, well, why not? Just go. I'll sponsor you. I'll watch the kids for 10 days, go to Nashville and have fun. And I went over there and I was just so inspired by absolutely everyone that I met. And plus like all the work had just built up to a certain point. And I got home and I think I took off another one of those pieces of black thick tar inside my body, and I found this diamond, you know, and I was like, oh my goodness. Like, I didn't see that before. It's always been there. It's always been who I am, but I didn't see it and I didn't know what it was. And I realized in that moment that the music and the talents and the gifts that I've been given that have kept me alive through something that so many people haven't been able to cope with and so many people haven't survived what I've been through, that pressure that on that coal and that blackness inside of me, once I dug it out and kept digging, I found this diamond, and I realized that music that had kept me alive was actually a gift, and I realized I needed to share that. And so that is when I started singing publicly. I went to the hardest thing I ever did out of everything ever was going to this little open mic in my hometown, and I sang 5 or 6 of my own original songs to, normally an open mic is like 5 to 10 people, but there was a wedding rehearsal on there that night. So it's like over 200 people there.
Oh my God.
I didn't know that was abnormal. I'm like, okay, I'm going to do this. And I just was like blindsided. I'm like, I have to do this. And it was so scary. And I didn't know that was an abnormal number of people. And I sang my songs. And then that was it. that, and I started doing open mics 4 or 5 nights a week. I randomly found people who started recording my music for free. You know, people that just sort of came in and were like, hey, here's this song you put on Facebook. We've done the backing track, do the vocals, we'll mix it. You know, cool. Released my first song in January 2020, worst year to try and become an artist, I guess. But it went straight to radio. I met so many beautiful people that connected with my music straight away. And, you know, just so much love just came through. And it was all about really just going, these songs that I wrote when I was at my absolute wit's end, you know, if I was feeling that darkness and that pull towards the darkness, I could sit down at the piano and I would let it all out through my fingers and I would sing it out and get that pressure out of me. And these songs that I'm still releasing are songs that kept me alive, you know, and they were never meant to be shared with anyone. They were in my bedroom. I was never going to, like, you know, that was not even a belief. That was never going to happen. And then to get stories and messages from other people now going, you know, I've had so many parents who have lost their children and they use my music at funerals. I've been invited to play and perform at funerals. And you know, people do tend to cry when they hear my music. That seems to be a common theme, but it's not a crying of horror. It's a crying of healing. Like, I literally just got back from an Anzac Day event on the weekend where I performed to a reunion of Vietnam veterans and their wives and their families, and there wasn't a dry eye in the whole room. You know, everyone's crying because we're sharing our stories and they're hearing my story and my heart through my songs.
It's beautiful.
And it was just so beautiful. Yeah, and it's been a real healing process sharing the music. But that's the diamond and the growth that I found. But I had to do the work. I had to dig through the black tar to find those. Even though that's always been there, it's definitely become stronger and brighter because of the pressure that I went through to get that.
That's beautiful.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. That's such a beautiful story, Ray. I mean, your superpower of, you know, being an artist and creating music and giving yourself that gift, that permission to perform. And to have that voice, that song, finally be released, and at the same time, going through the darkness and coming out the other side, that diamond, and to have you say, it's always been there. It's always been there. And you had to dig through that black tar in order to get to the diamond.
Someone once told me, if you're going through hell, don't stop and make a picnic. Keep going.
Right. Don't stop going. And have a picnic. There's no sightseeing, right?
No.
I'm going to stop off at the big ball of twine or, oh, look at that. That's an ice cream. You got to keep going.
Keep going. Climb to the top of the mountain. Keep going.
With stories, there's always somebody. There's always a person right now who's listening that is so captivated by what you've said, how you've said it, your story. It's inspiring. It provides hope for someone. And to that person right now, that person who's listening, who's really listening, that you've touched them, what would you say to that person right now, Ray? What would you say to them?
Well, I'd want to give you a big hug, if you can imagine that virtual hug. That's what I do when people come up to me after I sing, and I just give them a big hug. When I was going through my teenage years, you know, before I had children, before I had that change, all I ever wanted, I'm going to cry. All I ever wanted was to read something or see something where someone said they had been through what I'd been through and they were okay. It's going to be okay. That's all I ever wanted. And all I ever found was like psychology books of case studies of people who were drug addicts or alcoholics or people who had killed themselves. And, you know, I'd never heard anyone go, I'm okay. I went through this, but I survived. I dealt with it and I'm actually better off and I'm okay. And that was so hard and I couldn't talk about it. Like I said, the verbals were not there. And that was the hardest thing is I couldn't talk about it. I carried this really heavy shame around what I'd been through and what was going on. And I just wanted someone else to say, it's okay to be human. It's okay to have been through what you've been through. You've done nothing wrong. Mm-hmm. And that you will survive. And so that's kind of the biggest thing for me is if that's you and maybe you've experienced something similar to my story. If you have, I'm so sorry. But you're not alone. It's not just you. There's so many of us. And that's one of the things that PTSD really does make you believe. If you haven't dealt with it yet, it'll make you believe that you're different, that you're weird, that you're isolated, that no one else could ever possibly know what you're going through. And that belief is so hard to think that no one could ever possibly understand what you are feeling and what you're going through right now. And maybe on some level that is true. No one will ever know your story, just like you will never know my story. But you don't have to be alone. There are people out there and, you know, you will be okay no matter how hard it seems. Yeah. Allow the process to come through you. And the more you resist, I think in my experience, the more I resisted, the harder it was. And you just got to allow your body and the process to go naturally and surround yourself with safe, compassionate, loving people.
That's so true. That is so true. Thank you so much for sharing all of that, Ray. You allow yourself the process to go through the process and to surround yourself with loving and supportive people. And yes, you've done nothing wrong. We've done nothing wrong. This isn't something that was self-inflicted. This was something that was inflicted. And to share with the person that it's going to be okay. And you are an example of the truth of that, that there is an okay. There is an okay.
You can face it. You don't need to escape it. It will be fine.
You can face it. You don't need to escape it. Beautiful.
Be strong. Be strong.
Ray, thank you so much for joining us on PTSD and Beyond and sharing your story and these nuggets of wisdom, amazing self quotes. There's many of them. And thank you so much for being on today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I know what you're doing is such important work. And I just wish you all the best. And if there's any way I can support you or share with anyone, I'm here to help.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you so much. Guys, for you who want to go ahead and connect with Ray, we're going to have all of her contact information in the summary bio, the hyperlinks to her website, as well as the podcast and her social feeds and everything. So go ahead and click on and follow, share, like. And if you liked this episode, make sure that you subscribe, because when you do, then you get notification the day early before we drop on Fridays. You get a notice that, hey, there's a new episode, and you get to listen to it a day ahead of time. So go ahead and do that. Yes. And also, if you'd liked the episode, please say something about it. The more ratings that we get, guess what? Then other people will find us, and that more people will be helped, and you can for sure, get that notice and help us with that outreach. Guys, this is Dr. Dai with PTSD and Beyond, and of course, our gracious guest, Ray. And we'll see each other next time. So make it a good one, eh?
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed today's guest and their story on 30 Stories in 30 Days on the PTSD and Beyond podcast. Remember to hit that subscribe button, as well as to like and share and comment. And make a note, because guys, tomorrow at 12 noon Eastern Standard Time, we've got another story on 30 Stories in 30 Days at PTSD and Beyond.